Today, Nick and I are going to break down for you the 12 steps that you need if you want to write your first book. And today I'm joined by Nick Pavlidis. He's the founder of AuthorityGhostwriting.com. And I got connected to him from a friend. And this was a fantastic conversation. He literally breaks it down step by step, exactly what you need to do. In this episode, I'm going to cover for you, or he's going to cover for you, the number one mistake most people make when they write a book, how to get the writing how to turn your writing process into marketing, which I had never heard before, and then how to pull this all together in way less time than you expect. I've written a book before called How to Rob Your Bank, and it actually was quite helpful for my mortgage business. And Nick's stuff is just so much better than mine. He blew me away. He's obviously done this a ton. He's very good at it. So I think you're going to enjoy this conversation that I have with Nick. And if you're listening, you can click below to get links to Nick's and website if you want to reach out to him if it's something that you're interested in. Before we jump into this episode, I want to give a shout out to our title sponsor, Finmo. Finmo is a Canadian mortgage application, document collection, submission platform designed specifically for Canadian borrowers. Very easy for borrowers to use. It's got cool features like smart docs. It knows what documents your client needs based on the app. It's got smart submission notes, pulls key data from the app, and it's also connected to Lender Spotlight, which is the number one tool for searching rates and guidelines. Check them out at lendus.com/Finmo and check out this conversation I have with Nick. Hey, Nick, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me. Appreciate you having me here. I know I'm going to enjoy this conversation because we're going to talk about books, aren't we?
We're going to talk about books. We're going to do a deep dive in something that I'm working on as an experiment. So, but before we get into that, let's talk. Tell me a little bit about yourself and what you do with your company or companies.
Sure. Well, before I got into helping people with books, I was a lawyer for 13 years.
I'm sorry to hear that.
10 years in New York City. Oh, I know, right? It was so miserable being a lawyer, but it's so great being a former lawyer. So I love that I was a lawyer because it makes everything by comparison so much more enjoyable. So I spent the first 10 years as a corporate and bankruptcy litigator in New York City, working for big companies. And it was certainly not the most pleasant experience. I did really well there. I never lost a case, but not because I was better, smarter than anyone, but because I just went into court as a storyteller. So I would get up and I'd go into court. Opposing counsel oftentimes had been practicing law longer than I'd been alive. And they'd say, "Your Honor, section blah, blah, blah of this law says this and this and this and this." And then they'd sit down and then I'd stand up and say, "Your Honor, I'm going to tell you," or I'd say judge usually, "judge, you know, I'll talk about the law. I'll talk about the evidence. But first, let me tell you what happened here." And then I'd tell the story of what happened. And that worked out super well because everything from that point forward that opposing counsel would say got filtered through my story. And so I really knew and learned the power of telling effective stories to building relationships with people, to building a good reputation, to building confidence in people. And so I just started storytelling and writing and storytelling and writing. And the people at the law firm, it drove them crazy because I didn't write or tell stories the way lawyers do, quote unquote. So after about 10 years, I decided to try something new. And so I quit my job and transferred to a company still as a lawyer, but closer to home here in Massachusetts. And I searched for this side hustle. And it took me about a year and a half to figure out what I wanted to do. But eventually I became a ghostwriter. I had no idea what I was doing. But I got my first client in December 2015, got my second client shortly thereafter. Within 8 months of getting my first client, I was able to quit the practice of law, and I have written 100 books ever since. I've been on the Wall Street Journal list 7 times, the USA Today bestseller list 8 times. I've had the number one book on all of Amazon nonfiction multiple times, Barnes & Noble. I've helped people make really, really a lot of money because of their books, even when they don't sell a lot of books, by helping them avoid the biggest mistakes. And that's really what gets in thought leaders and authors' way, is not that they don't do something right. It's that they just make a few big mistakes that end up costing them a whole lot of time and money.
Right. Yeah. And it's always a couple small degrees that are off that make it go from working to not working. And so that's interesting. So, okay. And then the other thing that you've written a lot, you're a ghostwriter, but you also help people who want to write books that are basically like professionals, or you say thought leader, but I mean, even mortgage brokers, as I was saying before turning the recorder off, I wrote a book called How to Rob Your Bank, and I sold some copies, but that, like, the money was in the fact that somebody read the book and then said, "Well, heck, just Scott helped me with my mortgage." And you know, the $10 book and the $4,000 mortgage commission, it's pretty easy to see where the money was. It wasn't in the book.
That's right.
It really built a ton of trust though. And people were like, wow, because it's just another way, like It's another form of long form content, which what this is right here. Just some people, I do like to read. I also like to listen. It just depends on what I'm doing, right? Like, you know, sometimes some content lends itself better to reading if there's, you know, diagrams and frameworks and things. But
And the truth is, there are some authors. The second person I ever wrote a book with, he wanted to write a book about how to make money as a podcast guest. And he has since recorded me a video testimonial saying, hey, if you want a ghostwriter. In fact, he introduced me to the person who introduced me to you. 8 years later, like we're still that close. He refers people to me all the time. And we were talking about his book and he's like, do I want to put everything in my book? Because I suggested make it super easy. Put a 30-day plan on how to get on podcasts and make money from it in the back of the book. He said, won't that get in the way of people hiring me? He asked. And I said, and I responded, well, there are two types of people who read books, this type of book. One is the type of person who's never going to hire you. They're a do-it-yourselfer, or they just want to go and find the cheapest way to do something. If anything, they're gonna put your low-cost competitor out of business. The second type of book is a reader is exactly the type of reader you just described. They get the book. They say, wow, this makes sense. They look at the cover. They Google you, and they call you and say, can you do it for me? And so his book came out in 2016 or 17, and within 3 months, he had only distributed about 500 copies between giving them away and selling them. And he told me when I saw him in person, he goes, you are right. I'm already making $6,000 a month from people who just called me up on this little self-published book that only distributed 500 copies. And as of last year, I just talked with him like a month ago, but as of last year, he said he's easily made it seven figures because of that book.
Right. I believe it. So like, and I had done, when I was promoting my book, I had made over $100,000 in mortgages from the book, and I hadn't sold that many copies, but it doesn't take long to get to $100,000 in mortgages directly from somebody saying, somebody gave me your book and we need to talk. Or I saw your book on a table. I didn't even read it. And because I used to go around and put them in places like waiting rooms and stuff. Like, you know, if I had clients that had doctors that had a waiting room, say, hey, can I put my book in your waiting room? And they're like, sure, we don't care. It's a magazine book. Like, and then people would see it and they would write down my name and they'd say, hey, I saw your book and I want to talk to you about a mortgage. And so like, there's, you can't do that. I can't drop a podcast episode on a waiting room in a medical clinic because it's the wrong format, but you can do it with a book. And so there's things. And also if you're speaking, most of the books I sold were speaking. So I would talk and then I'd get up and at the end, you know, I'd speak for free, but then I'd sell my books. But now they take my books with them and then they'd reach out to me later. So,
I had one speaker. He was a software salesperson and he used to get $5,000 to $8,000 worth of commissions from selling software. He called me up. He said, listen, I want to write a book to sell my software, but I don't really know. How do you write a book to sell software? I said, all right, well, tell me about your business. He said, well, I teach people on how to get online reviews and then how to use them to market. And I said, okay, so how many people are in the room at a time? He said, oh, about 100 or 200. I said, how many people buy? Oh, about 10 or so. And I'm like, well, that's not a great closing rate. Why do you think that they leave without buying? He goes, well, because these people are medical professionals. So they go back to their office and they're the medical professional. The office manager is the one that has to do it. So they don't know how to communicate it to the office manager. And so they don't have this confidence in it. So I said, okay, great. There are a couple of other little things. I said, let's write a book that they can leave with that gives them the confidence that all they have to do is hand this to their office manager and their office manager can use your software. The very first speaking engagement that he had his books for, he called me up. He said, listen, I can't tell you what was the book. Maybe it was my confidence because I had the book. Whatever it was, I made over $40,000 during this speaking engagement. And it's all about identifying your goal as a business owner, no matter what it is, and then writing the book that helps you close the gap between the people who need what you want to sell and them making that decision to buy from you.
Yeah, I totally agree. And so as an experiment, so if you're listening to this and you're a mortgage broker, I'm telling you, like, I know that just some mortgage brokers have written books, Paul Meredith being one of them. He's been our guest on our show before, and he gets business all the time from his book. And yes, there's some work to put it, but there's two things to this. One, you can hire somebody like you to help you write it. Two, you can write it and get someone else to edit it, you know, and help you with it. So there's it's not like it's, and you don't have to do it all, like, you don't have to lock yourself out and ignore your business. Just do it out over time, make it a manageable thing. And if somebody wants to write a book, so what's your first step? If I'm like, okay, I want to write a book that helps me generate mortgage clients, and what would you be tell you my first step should be?
Well, I always say, so there's a few big mistakes that authors make. The first mistake is not that they don't write a good book, it's that they write the wrong book. And if they write the wrong book, the worst thing that can happen is for it to be a runaway success. So most ghostwriters or writers, and like you mentioned, I do other things. I do own a publishing company. I actually own a bookstore that helps get your books on shelves and all the sales to count as bookstore sales and a few other projects. My ecosystem is helping business people, thought leaders, experts expand their income and influence using books. And so part of these pieces come together on different parts of the process. But the first thing I do is say, okay, tell me about your business and tell me what you want your business to look like 3 years from now. Are you serving the same type of borrowers that you're serving now? Are you looking to get into commercial as opposed to residential? Are you looking to move upstream into luxury, into high jumbo mortgages, and now you're doing more conventional? Are you looking to do more refis as the rates come down? Are you looking to be the refi guy? Are you trying to enter into a sub-2 market or some type of other type of loan program or loan focus or customer borrower focus than you're doing now? And so that would be my first question for you is, all right, great. There is a process, but to make the process most effective, I need to learn a little bit more. Like 3 years from now, if your life and business is just incredible, what does that look like? Who are you serving? And what are you doing all day? What are you talking about all day? What types of products and services are you closing?
Right. So then you'd say, then if I can recap this, step one is to begin with the end in mind and write the book that serves the customer you want in 3 years, not the customer you think that you maybe you're working with today. Because the thing about a book is that it does have a long, it's not like, you know, recording a video. It's like there's a sort of process to this. It takes time. And but it's also got a longer build time, but it also has a longer shelf life, if you will, because it can actually be it can be working for you for years afterwards if it's done well. So it's not like,
yes.
So even though there's a bit more work, it's worth it because it lasts a long time if it's properly designed. What would be the next step?
Exactly.
Let's say I've got a clear idea of who I want my customer to be and who I want to be serving in 3 years. What would you tell me is the next step that I should think about?
Okay. So the first step that I would go through after that is say, okay, so let's write the book that gets you there rather than the book gets you where you want to go, rather than the book that just documents where you are and where you've been. And so how do we do that? We say, I'll ask you. So tell me about this customer. What is it that they want and why don't they already have it? And so the truth is nobody wants a book. Nobody wants a book about mortgage. Nobody wants a book about borrowing. Nobody wants a book about making their bank irrelevant. Nobody wants a book about life insurance. They want their life to be insured. They want to pay no taxes. They want to have the lowest interest rate over the longest period or shortest period or whatever it is. They want that financial goal. They want financial independence. They want to get their house and get into a house that gets them out of a tough neighborhood or that gets them into a good school district. They don't want a mortgage. And the reason that they don't have that life is because usually it's because of one of three false beliefs. I can't do it. There's something wrong with me. Oh, I can't get into a good school district because I don't have high education. I don't have high income. There's something wrong with themselves. The second one is there's something wrong with their environment. I'm just too busy. I like barely can scrape by. There's no way I can come up with a down payment for this type of thing. So there's something in my life. Like I have all the knowledge. I have all the skill set, but there's something around me holding me back. And then the third one is, yeah, all of these books about fancy financial moves or whatever, that's just for rich people or that's just for that people. It doesn't work in real life with people like me. And so what I would do next is, okay, so let's learn a little bit about what are the most frequently asked questions that these people ask or what are the reasons they don't already have this information? So we'll explore a little bit about the emotional side of the ideal future reader, your ideal future customer. And once we understand that, we start to get a little bit of a picture of what your table of contents might look like, what information we might want to put in the book through telling stories. And so we begin with the end in mind, we understand the customer, and then we want to go just a little deeper, just for a moment, to talk about first reaction as to why the customers don't, or why your future customers don't already have this in place. And so that way we can learn a little bit more about how to communicate with them on an emotional level.
Right. Okay. So step one, begin with the end in mind, the customer you want in 3 years. Step two, define an avatar. So like, it's not just Sally, it's like, what do they want? Why do they want it? And then what are the things that are getting in the way? Like some of the challenges. Mm-hmm. And then would that lead you
that emotional thing?
Yeah, the emotional part. And then would that lead to then framing out the table of contents? Would that be the next step that you'd say you'd want to do, or what would be the, what do you think?
Yeah, the next thing I would do is frame out that table of contents. But a half step before that is, okay, it's not just an avatar. I encourage people to go one step further. That actually makes it so much easier is to identify people they actually know in real life who fit that avatar. So not Sally, like your cousin is your ideal future person.
So if you're a mortgage broker, you decide on, I really like working with investor clients, people with less than three properties, and they're, you know, they want to use real estate as a way to build a pension for themselves that they don't have.
Yeah.
And you
that's
think
a great avatar.
You think of a very specific clientele. You're like, it's, you know, Kevin and
a person,
Susie. And then it's like, that's what I'm going after.
Like you see that real estate sign when you're driving down the street, you know, Mrs. Smith Construction. I want to be writing a loan for Mrs. Smith 3 years from now because of this book.
Okay. Yeah, that's really good. So that's a good distinction. So then the next step is to frame out the table of contents. That's sort of like the path to get you from where they are, where they currently are, which is they don't have the outcome they want to the outcome that they want. Is there any advice you have on writing out, like designing a table of contents, or like what does that look like?
Yeah. And so one thing that, you know, we talked briefly about is the difference between a good book and a great book and where you can create that effect, that great book effect. Good books give people confidence and competence in information. It makes them competent by giving them information. Here are the 10 ways to qualify for a loan. Here are the 7 things to do there, whatever. That's helpful, but that doesn't move people. That doesn't move people to take action. What moves people to take action is when they read from a book is when they find a great book. And so the difference between a good book and a great book is good books just give competence and information. Great books do that, but they also build confidence and inspiration. And the table of contents is the main piece where we build confidence. And confidence in a reader is, wow, I can see this working for me. So if you want to write a book about helping someone lose 100 pounds and chapter one is stop eating after 1 p.m., that might be a little bit big of a step. They say, oh, I can't do that. I'm so busy at work. I have to eat there. Or if it's a leadership book and chapter one is you need to start telling jokes around the office, that someone might be like, oh, forget it. I'm not funny. I'm an introvert or whatever. So you need to create a table of contents. So when they look at it, because what happens is people look at the cover of a book and they say, oh, this is interesting. Then they might flip it over or look on BarnesandNoble.com or Amazon at the back cover copy and say, okay, this seems interesting. And then they either scroll down to the table of contents or open up to the table of contents and they look at it. That's their journey. If that is confusing, too cute, they don't understand, or just too hard, it just seems too big for them to do, they say, ah, this book isn't for me, and they close it or they X out. And so designing that table of contents to be simple, if you can, cut it down into sections. So that way you can say, hey, there's only 3 things you need to do to qualify for any mortgage you want. Number one, you have to have this. Number two, you have to have that. And number three, you have to have this. And then once you get those 3 pieces, that's all you have to say about your book. And they say, well, tell me about number one. And that's where your chapters come in. Well, there's 4 ways to do that. 1, 2, 3, 4. Oh, that's pretty cool. And so you just open people's brains up one little step at a time. And it's just confidence, confidence, confidence. And then they say, okay, this book could work for me.
Right. Okay. That's really good. So begin with the end in mind, write the book for where the customers you want in 3 years. Step two, begin with the end of mind. Step two is write the book that you want where you want to be. Identify what do they want, you know, why do they want it, and get really clear. Actually picture a person in your mind, the customer that you're working with right now that you would love, if you could work with 10 of those people a month, you'd be in heaven. Then step three is frame with a table of contents, thinking about this, these buckets of like, okay, well, here's 3 major things you need to do. And then you can break that down further into, because I see a lot of really good books have like Ryan Holiday does this a lot. It's like, hey, he's got it into 3 sections. And then each section, like you said, has like 4 chapters or something. And it's like, okay, here's the big thought. And then now let me go into the details of that big thought that you can be more granular. Is that what you're suggesting?
Yeah. Yeah. And there are some very successful books. I have one book that's been translated into 21 different languages. It has 4 sections, but it has 14 chapters total. I have another book that hit both the USA Today and the Wall Street Journal that has 14 chapters in one section. So it really depends. But the idea is the simpler, if someone looks at it and says, oh, here's 12 steps, like 12, if you didn't have sections and you had 12 chapters, people are used to 12 months of the year, 12 steps.
Right. Like, but you need to use, some form of a container, whatever that looks like, in order to put
exactly.
information, and ideally a container that they recognize. So it feels somewhat familiar and they can just, I did this before, I can do this again.
Absolutely.
Right. So the actual container could vary slightly. I'm thinking of, you know, those lunch containers that have like, they divide them. Some of them have three sections. Some of them are just one. It's kind of like that. You decide on the lunch container that you're going to use that's going to be best for this information. And then you put your information in that container. What would be the next step? I've got that part. What would you say is the next thing I should be focusing on?
So once you know your chapters, your containers, I go to each chapter and then I write the takeaways first. I write what you want the people to take away, seven bullet points, three bullet points. This is what I want people leaving this chapter knowing. And so when you're done with that, you still haven't written a thing, but when you're done with that, you have created an ideal outline for your book. So you have, let's say, 12 chapters, and in those 12 chapters, you have five takeaways. And if you only wrote 700 words per takeaway, that's 42,000 words, which is 40 to 60,000 words is the sweet spot. So essentially, if you ended up just writing the equivalent of a blog post for each of your chapter takeaways, but you did it, we could talk about the next step, how to organize it and how to do it well that way. But it breaks the writing down, number one, to be super emotionally charged to connect with the reader and understand what motivates them and how to help them overcome that. But number two, it breaks down the writing process to be much simpler. There's a lot of art and science to it, but the idea is it breaks down a 200-page book into manageable bites that are pre-designed to emotionally connect with the ideal future customer.
Right. And you don't have to think, you won't sit there with writer's block. So, and actually it's interesting that you're literally outlining exactly what I did when I wrote How to Rob Your Bank. It was several years, like, I don't know what year that was, maybe 2012. And I was struggling like crazy with this book because I had the premise of, like, this would be so much fun because of the content. I could, start each chapter with a quote, a funny quote. And then I have titles that were really kind of catchy. Right. But then I was like, it wasn't until I wrote the table of contents and then the whole book wrote itself. Once I wrote the table of contents, I did what you said. Then I was like, what do they need to learn from this? And then the next thing I asked myself is, what is the story I can tell? There's the emotional that makes them feel confident. What's the story I can tell around this that leads into the thing I want to teach them? I'm sure you're probably going to say something about that next or soon. And then I would, from there, the whole thing just was like, I wrote it in no time. Prior to that, it was just draft after draft and it didn't make sense. And it was like, because I didn't have anything to hang it on. And I was just going wherever my ADD brain was wanting to take me. And I didn't have a path. And it was so much easier when I did that.
Well, it's funny. I have a client who hired me in 2021. And when he was referred to me, he said, hey, I had this experience with another ghostwriter. And, it was fine or whatever. But someone suggested I connect with you. And I said, all right, tell me about your process. So he told me about the process and it was fine. Most writers, they don't begin with the end in mind. They just say, okay, what book do you want to write? And they help you write it. And there's nothing wrong with that. You'll end up with a good book. You'll like your book, but it might be the wrong book. And you pass up so many opportunities to do it. And that's why a lot of people are like, oh, I'm not selling too many books. My process is designed to make you money even before the book comes out. And that's what we can go into in just a couple more steps is when we go into that. Significant money even before the book comes out. But it helps you prepare for the future and write into the future as opposed to just documenting where you've already been. And since that guy hired me, he said he took 7 years to do his first book. So it's 3+ years and we're working on his 7th book.
Right.
Just following this process.
This map better. Okay. So what's the next step for you? What would you say? Okay, we've got the chapters. We know what the takeaways are. What's the next thing that we need to think about?
So the next thing is I sort of hinted at it in my last sentence is I create a chapter structure, the paint by numbers approach. You ever, when you were a kid, you see those books where like there's a picture of a duck on it and it's divided into a whole bunch of different pieces. And there's number one in a bunch of them, number two, number three. And it's a paint by numbers coloring book where you got to color in all the number ones white, all the number twos black, all the number threes yellow, all the number fours green. And when you look at the page before you start painting or coloring, it looks really elementary. It looks like an outline of a duck, almost like a roadmap. But once all the paint's on it, it just looks like a duck. And so what, because all the numbers are covered, right? And so what I do is I recommend people choose a chapter structure, especially when you're building a book that is designed to grow your thought leadership, your impact, your network, and your profits as a business owner, and start out with a story that demonstrates, like you were saying, then goes into your teaching, but not teaching independent of the story, teaching reflecting upon the story. So Scott used to struggle finding leads, and then he did this, and then that happened. So it's almost like a before.
Scott couldn't get a date to the prom, and then he learned how to do this, and he still doesn't have a date to the prom.
Yeah, now he's a chaperone for the prom.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. He still didn't get a date to the prom.
I showed them, I'm there. Yeah. So, yeah. And so, like, say there's a chapter on getting more financial advisors to refer borrowers your way. You know, Scott tried everything to break out of just getting referrals from real estate agents. He tried going to networking groups. He tried this. He tried BNI. He tried that. He tried that. Nothing would work. He thought because he was, but he struggled because he thought he was an introvert and needed to be the party guy or the life of the party to attract people. And then one day he stumbled into a room of financial advisors a mentor of his suggested that he reach out to financial advisors and ask them if they're open to receiving referrals from Scott. If he notices,
sounds a lot like, you know, you know an awful lot about my industry for a guy who's like, just the examples you're using, that's very, very well done. So, okay. So basically there's a structure, but there's a story, but then within the net story, there's a reflecting on the lesson from the story, like the takeaways, but you're kind of talking about the emotional thing. It's not just, you know, Scott had a problem. He did this. Scott no longer has a problem. You actually want to tie in the emotional element of it as well, right?
Correct. And that's where, remember at the beginning, we talked about like, why don't these people already have them? I'm too busy. I'm not smart.
And you're actually, you can kill objections there too. Like there's that's part.
That's what they're designed to do. And so these stories at the beginning of each chapter are designed to help each reader build an emotional connection with your content in at least one chapter. So what are the big, say 12 chapters, what are the 12 most common objections that people feel about themselves, their environment, or the subject matter that keep them from moving forward? So if someone's a single mom or new divorcee or widowed and needs to move into a different house or whatever your ideal customer is, you say, okay, let me find an example of someone who is just like them and who was able to achieve it. And so if there's someone who's introverted for a leadership book, you say, you know, Scott tried everything to motivate his team. He tried faking enthusiasm. He tried this. And then one day he just decided he was going to start inviting each of his team members once a week out to lunch. He had a simple conversation with them. We could talk about anything. And wouldn't you know it, they started opening up to him. And then 12 months later, they were the most productive group in the company. An introvert, this, right? So it's like, here's Scott. Scott had this situation, and that situation is the common objections. Scott tried everything. It didn't work. But then he tried this little simple thing I'm about to tell you. And all of a sudden his life changed. That's where, remember we talked about competence and information, and then build confidence through the table of contents and inspiration, the difference between a good book and a great book. These stories is where the inspiration comes from. Wow. If Scott can do it, I can do
right.
it. I'm just like Scott.
Okay.
And so we do this outline. So the chapter structure is a story that breaks down those objections by showing people just like them actually achieving what they want, followed by your teaching. Like if you just took a white paper and stuck a story in front of it, it would all of a sudden become more interesting.
Yeah.
So what you do is you just say, hey, this works because Scott matched his method to his personality. And so there's not one way to build relationships with financial advisors, insurance agents, or whatever. There's the way that and then you start teaching. All of a sudden you're teaching, but you refer back to Scott and it's more interesting because it's a story about Scott. And so open with a story, then go to your teaching and then give additional small examples from either other people who serve the same people that you serve in different ways. And we'll talk about that in a second, or to break down some additional objections. So that way you have stories and teaching for that. allows the reader to leave with your five takeaways or your three takeaways that you pre-designed for that chapter. So your big opening story might click two of the check marks, and then, all right, I want people to leave with these other 3 points.
They would all be in the sub things. Okay. All right.
Exactly.
And this, what would be the next step that you'd recommend for somebody doing this?
So I encourage people. So once you have the outline, then start sprinting to the first draft. And what I mean by that is you don't stop for a quote. If you want to put a quote somewhere, you drop a footnote and write insert quote. You don't stop for research. If you say, hey, a majority of people do this, drop a footnote and say confirm with research. And just sprint to the first draft as fast as you can. And most people can write an entire first draft, even if they're busy, 700 words a day. You're talking, you know, 30 days, 40 days or something like that, 50 days. You just write every morning for an hour. Don't worry about typos. And the idea here is you are looking for your gaps. And so when you outline your chapters and you put your chapter structure, your paint by numbers, you could fill in, hey, I'm going to tell this story here. I'm going to tell this story here. Where do I need a story? That's one way people do it. The other way is just to start sprinting. And either way works. Sometimes writing, you know, Sally's story, Scott's story, Nick's story at the beginning of each chapter is helpful. But what I want to do is identify where your gaps of stories or information are, because that is an incredible opportunity to start making money before your book ever comes out. And this is that next step. So once you know, so the next step is you start filling in the chapters. And once you have your real dirty first draft, you say, all right, I could use a story for this bullet point in chapter 4. I want people to get out of chapter 4 some type of, you know, how to fix my credit or whatever. And you might decide, hey, maybe some type of credit repair advisor or maybe some type of financial advisor is a good referral source for people who are at the outset or at the end of fixing their credits. So instead of you sharing your knowledge for those things, you could reach out and start using the book writing process as a networking tool to build relationships with strategic future partners. And so the truth is, for you to be living your life that you want to be living 3 years from now, the end that we began with, there needs to be 3 categories of people in your life. Prospects, these are your future customers, the people who are going to hire you in the future. Influencers, people your prospects already pay attention to. They might not pay money to, but they pay attention to. It's like podcasters, writers, journalists, bloggers, things like that. And gatekeepers, people your future prospects already pay money to. These are those strategic partners, the financial advisors, the CPAs, things like that. And so you can remember the acronym vegans, nothing wrong with veganism, but they don't like when I say this, but it's memorable. So prospects, influencers, and gatekeepers, P-I-G, pig. The more pigs in your world, the more bacon you bring home. And so the idea here is we write the book to the prospects in the future. So that's your writing it to, like you said, your future customers. And then when we have a gap in information, or even when we don't, we may reach out to a journalist or a podcaster and say, hey, Scott, I know you're really, you serve a whole lot of people who are looking to improve their financial world. I have a book I'm writing. It's about this. And there's a chapter. See, this is why we don't do it right away, because we want to know what.
This is freaking genius. This is so good. Like, if you're listening to this, I'm like, oh my gosh, this is such a good idea, because you're building. Yeah, you reach out to your financial advisor and tell them you're writing a book. They're going to be like, what? Like, immediately, yeah. you are standing out from the crowd, and now you're getting. They're going to also, if they give you, if you're quoting them in the book or telling their story or their client's story, and then they're also going to be now a advocate for your book. And like, so that's actually genius.
100%. And so, hey, I'd love to feature you in my book. I already have a publisher, or I already have this market, whatever it is. And even if it helps expand your network, like I get messages on LinkedIn all the time. Hey, I'd love to collaborate with you or whatever. And all of us do. We ignore those. But when someone reached out to me, my old law school, interestingly enough, my law school never wanted to feature me in the alumni magazine as a lawyer. And then when they heard about some of the books I ghost wrote, they reached out to me and they featured me in the alumni magazine. They reached out and said, hey, I'm the editor of the Boston College Law School alumni magazine. We heard about your ghostwriting stuff. We'd love to feature you. Sure, I'll find time to do that, right? And so we reach out to gatekeepers and influencers. So we write it to the customers. And then I like to include at least one interview per chapter that's strategically placed by people who serve the same future clientele that you want to serve in a non-competitive way. Financial advisors, CPAs, family attorneys, you know, any other type of, right? So all of those folks, and you feature them in the book. And that's where the second draft comes in. So you go, you close those gaps with the second draft, either by telling the story or whatever. And then when you get on the phone or on Zoom with them, hey, do you mind if we, you get 5-10 points of contact. Zoom, okay, great. I want to record it. Maybe we'll release the whole interview as a podcast as well. Or maybe we'll include the whole interview as a bonus. So when people buy the book, they come to my website and sign up for the newsletter so they can watch the whole interview. I'll put your contact information. And I can't tell you how many times that one simple strategy, as opposed to what most people do, which is hide in the corner for 7 months or 7 years, write the book and then release it to the world. And they're the only person that people that's featured in the book, that's talking in the book. And they wonder why nobody cares once they run out of cousins. And the truth is, it's because nobody cares once you run out of cousins. So the fact that you wrote a book is attractive. I mean, you can make a whole lot of money doing it the regular way, like using your book as a networking tool, leaving it behind in places after it comes out. But when you have other people who are influencers, gatekeepers who serve the same, I can't tell you how many times I've had not just, hey, let's do a webinar when this comes out together. Hey, do you want to, I'll promote this to my customer base. Do you want to come to my office and do an event for my client, a client event about how to qualify for mortgages or whatever the words are. I even had one financial advisor before his book was even finished, get $62 million assets under management deposited with him. Makes 1%. You can do the math. He was making 620. I didn't audit him, but this is what I'm told. He was making $620,000 a year before his book ever came out because he talked about his book right away. And he,
but yeah, he helped, other people helped him write it, and now they also help you promote it. Okay, so you, let's say you do that. I love this gatekeeper info. What will be the next thing? So now I've got that second draft done. What's the next thing that you think I should do?
So once you have a cop, so I wouldn't edit the daylights out of it. What I would do is send it to a few people who are important to you to get feedback after you got this second draft written. Say it's pre-editing, it's designed to have some typos. It might even be a little repetitive because sometimes you write something in chapter two that you put
you do again because you're not sure where it goes. You forget, you know, it doesn't, yeah.
Yeah. And so give me some feedback. Let me know if there's anything I'm missing before you spend 7 hours making this. These three paragraphs perfect, only for people to say, this didn't make sense, and you just decide to delete it. And so you sprint to the first draft, you fill it in through interviews. That's in the second draft, that's where you go through your footnotes like it's a checklist. I need a quote here. I need to confirm the research. So it's very systematized. And then you reach out for feedback. And once you get the feedback, you decide which feedback am I gonna use? Am I gonna incorporate this? Do I agree with this? It's your book after all. You incorporate the feedback, and then the next step is you send it to an independent editor. Whether you use a ghostwriter or you write it yourself, whoever wrote the book knows what they meant, and they're in the creative mode. Whereas there are professional editors who very affordably check for writing style and consistency and cleanliness, and they inevitably find some really cool things. So you send it to the editor. And then the editor will send it back to you, usually in a week or two. And then you accept or reject. Sometimes you intentionally do something that Chicago Manual of Style says you should never do. And it's perfectly fine to do that. There are some things where it's, you know, if it's consistent and you like to do initial caps of a term that doesn't need to be initial capped, it's totally fine. But you decide what you agree with from the editor. Then once that's done, you got your manuscript finalized. And then it becomes a production process where you could either seek endorsements from the front of the book. You start getting it designed using a layout designer, a graphic designer who does turns the Word document or Google document into the inside of a book. You get your cover design. Some people like to have their cover design earlier, but you get your cover designed and your full cover wrap. You can't have that full cover wrap done until the interior is done because you don't know how thick the book needs to be. So how thick the spine is. And then you release it to the world. And, if you're going to be doing traditional publishing, sometimes you start that process early on. If you're going to do self-publishing, then it's a matter of going to, a company like IngramSpark.com. I would encourage against nothing against Amazon, but I would encourage, especially if you want any chance of your book showing up in bookstores, to not publish it through KDP, which is Amazon's publishing platform, but to publish it through Ingram Spark, which is a competitor self-publishing platform, if you're going to choose self-publishing.
Hey, Nick, wow, this has been such an amazing conversation. You basically walked me through, I wrote down 12 steps. I don't know if there's actually 12, but it gives, like, I have done this before, and this is like, obviously you've done it way more than me, because this is just, there's so much, this is just way better than the way I did it. So if there's somebody listening to this, mortgage broker, realtors, and they're like, hey man, I think I'd like to use a book and a book, just so people know, is just part of a marketing plan. It's like, don't think that you're going to be the next John Grisham and make millions of dollars. It's probably not going to happen, or James Clear, Atomic Habits, but it can absolutely get you more customers for your primary business, whatever that is. So where can people find you
online? The easiest way is to go to authorityghostwriting.com, helping people build authority. So if you remember that, nick@authorityghostwriting.com. And I have ways where I help people who want to write themselves, either through one-on-one coaching or a group coaching program, where I have a six-month program that I record every week what to do this week, this week, this week, this week, all the way through the first 22 weeks. I give you access for 6 months, so, because there's some wiggle room there, but it's super well guided and organized, calendar to get it done yourself, all the way up to full ghostwriting services. And then in that group program, I do office hours to answer questions in between and connect on Slack as well. So that way you do have some guidance there. So if you just want to email me, nick@authorityghostwriting.com, I'm happy to point you in the right directions or see if there's a way that I can help you. I also,
whichever option's better. And I'll make sure that in the show notes, there'll be links that you guys can connect with Nick. Like, this has been awesome, man. And you've inspired me. I told you I'm working on a book right now, and you've given me, like, I'm completely revamping my plan after this conversation. It is not going to, like, my plan is like, oh, and I thought my plan was clever. I'm like, no, it was not as clever as this.
My pleasure.
Thanks, brother.
My pleasure.
Hey, thanks again for listening. And hopefully you felt inspired by that. Again, if you want to connect with Nick, feel free to do that. I think the guy obviously knows what he's doing, and it was an awesome conversation. Those 12 steps really just broke down for me exactly how to make this happen. And if you're listening to this and you find this podcast useful, two things you can do. One, please leave us a review. I'd really appreciate it. You know, that helps other people see the podcast. Or two, send this to a friend or someone you think should write a book, and have them have a listen and see what they think of it. Because I thought this was a really fun conversation. Thanks again for listening. Remember, there's no problem that you're facing in your mortgage business that someone else hasn't already solved. Your challenge is, like, who's got the answer for me that you can copy it? Thanks again for listening, and make it an outstanding day.